We're in the middle of a speaker's race, and for the first time we have third-party groups involved in a speaker's race without fear of legal consequences. I guess they could get involved before, nobody really tested it, but you know, two years ago, Shackelford and the ACLU jumped into this thing, kicked the door open, and here you are. So tell me how a speaker's race looks. You know, why you think third parties ought to be involved in speaker's races and kind of how it works.
Well, I think that Judge Sparks, who issued the ruling, said it very well in his legal decision that the speakership is a very important position. I'm not going to quote him verbatim, but this is a very important position. It's as important as anything else that the legislature does. And the people should be allowed to be involved in that discussion and debate as with any other piece of legislation. It should be troubling to those of us who tend to kind of like public dialogue and enjoy free speech and particularly political speech, that we would ever say that people shouldn't be able to exercise their voice in our democracy. When you start hedging down that way, which we did in Texas unconstitutionally for 35-ish years, you start wondering, well, then what's next? You know, should maybe people not speak about taxes or property rights or water rights? You know, where do you start in the drawing the line? And I think that Judge Sparks is absolutely right in his decision and in his ruling that the people should be allowed to express their viewpoint and engage just like they would in any other legislative issue.
So the idea here is that the speaker's vote is just another vote, and people should be able to lobby that in the same way that they lobby something on school tax.
I'd argue it's not just like any other vote. It's perhaps more important. The office of the speaker is a very important, a third-ranking constitutional officer. The powers of the speaker are very broad, perhaps more so even than the speaker of the U.S. House in terms of the relationship with the body. The speaker appoints the committee chairs, has something approaching absolute power over the floor. That's pretty stout stuff. That directly impacts every other policy decision made in the following 139 days of a legislative session.
Okay. Joe Strauss has been speaker for one session. Mm-hmm. Got elected, 2 years ago in a House that had 76 Republicans, 74 mm-hmm. Democrats. Talk a little bit about why there ought to be a speaker's race this time, and what's different between this House and that House, and why it might be appropriate to change.
Well, I think there are a couple things at play. First, when you look at the dynamics of this election cycle, Texans pretty strongly rejected Democrats. I think you could say, that's the one thing I think all of us will agree on, is Texans said no to Democrats. They also seem to be saying no to liberal public policies. The strength by which then they approved Republican candidates, and especially Republican candidates who were speaking in very strong with strong conservative language, should be taken as a signal that the people of Texas are very interested in strong conservative leadership. Certainly, I think Joe Strauss gets that. You see it no other way than his Drudge Report and various internet ads that he has floating around there, showing up on Drudge Report and other places, that list, pro-life, low-tax champion, conservative Joe Strauss, you know, for House Speaker. That certainly isn't the way Joe Strauss was advertising himself in the lead-up to his involvement in politics. I mean, the big deal in the Dallas Morning News and other places made about how he was a moderate, that he wasn't one of these wild-eyed, radical conservatives, that he was a very reasonable moderate. Well, now suddenly he wants to kind of be associated more with where clearly a majority of Texans are, which is a very strong conservative bent. That then leads to the question, well, then maybe we do need to have a discussion about who should be the speaker. We certainly need, Texans I think certainly are saying we want a more conservative speaker. Is that Joe Strauss? Well, I think Joe Strauss needs to make that case. Certainly there is, when you look at the way he became speaker with 65 Democrats and 11 Republicans, that makes a lot of people question where are his loyalties going to continue to be.
Do you think that election 2 years ago was about his politics, or do you think that was about antipathy toward his predecessor?
I think it was probably a mixture of both. You know, clearly Joe Strauss was not any of that group of 11 Republicans' first choice. They've all admitted that. They went through however many ballots among themselves they burned in the fireplace, I guess, with much drama. You know, to have been a fly on that wall might have been kind of cool. But yeah, so he didn't certainly. It wasn't like there was this huge clamoring for Joe Strauss. It's historically interesting to note that at this point, 2 years ago, late November, 2 years ago, there were nine candidates for Speaker of the House, and Joe Strauss was not in that mix. You know, he wasn't one of them. You know, so one I see when I hear folks today going into Thanksgiving week saying, "Oh, well, Joe Strauss has a lock on being Speaker of the House," I suspect Tom Craddock was thinking something similar going into Thanksgiving week 2 years ago. Speaker's races are going to be fluid and dynamic. So there's so many things that are different, though, going into this session with the sheer number of conservatives who were elected. And they're going to have to listen carefully to their constituents. They're going to have to listen to what direction and divine out the direction that Texans are wanting going into this next legislative session.
What do you think is the difference between what's been termed a moderate Republican and what's been termed a conservative Republican? Where do you think the real differences lie in someone who manages the House in a conservative way and someone who manages the House in what people might call a moderate Republican way?
Well, for folks, people like me, who Speaker Strauss refers to as outside forces, all these voters who are trying to hijack what's been an insider deal. I think for all of us, this is a question of policy outcomes. What are we getting hearings on? What are we not getting hearings on? It certainly raises questions when you look at the House Ways and Means Committee. Maybe the most striking example for me, given kind of more the fiscal nerd hat that I wear. I'm not sure when or where it makes sense to put a liberal Democrat as chairman of the tax writing committee. That just raises all sorts of flags and questions and sirens go off and klaxons ring when you see that sort of thing. It really calls into question leadership. If you say you're a conservative, I think whether you're a fiscal conservative or a social conservative, all of them though tend to circle around the flag of good, right-thinking tax policy. In that Ways and Means Committee, there were no hearings on things like ending diversions to the gas tax. We didn't even have an opportunity to debate permanent exemptions for small businesses. You just go down the line of things that simply were ignored. And that was because of the chairman that was selected. And I think that if Joe Strauss wants to continue to be the speaker, and by all accounts, I guess he clearly does want to continue to be the speaker. I'm not sure anyone just kind of walks away from those kind of positions voluntarily. I think that it's going to be incumbent upon him to demonstrate in some way other than trust me that this would be a very different Joe Strauss speakership. But for the moment, all we have is what he has done. And that leaves something to be desired.
If he were a conservative Republican, let's just say, for mm-hmm. example, if Joe Strauss actually is a conservative Republican, mm-hmm. if you're running a House that is 76 Republicans and 74 Democrats, is that going to be a conservative House?
Well, what we know is...
Are you constrained by, the politics of your membership?
Well, the politics of the membership were more conservative than the committee chairs were. Looking at our scorecard, the committee chairs underperformed the House average. I'm not sure you could have randomly picked worse half Democrat, half Republican chairs. His chairman, again, underperformed. The Republicans underperformed the Republicans, the Democrats underperformed the Democrats, and they as a group underperformed the House as an average. So I don't think it's fair to say that he clearly selected 50-50 Republicans versus Democrats, but I'm not sure that that's exactly what people are interested in. I think against policy outcomes, it's the ideas that matter, it's the positions that matter, it's the policy outcomes that people are most interested in. We didn't see that. The other thing I would suggest to you is that leadership isn't about doing what just 50% plus one of whatever entity might want. Leadership is holding fast to a position of moving forward almost regardless of what the personal consequences might be, because you believe it's the right thing to do, and you're going to do what you can to convince others of the right thing to do. That's leadership.
There seem to be two versions of what a speaker should do, at least two versions.
Sure.
One version is you're elected speaker, you come from some ideological place, mm-hmm. and that you govern the house from that ideological place. The other view seems to be that, you know, basically you're the manager here, and your job is to be the traffic cop to make sure fights are settled, that the membership has its way, and that seems to be how Strauss has described himself.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a view on which kind of speaker is better?
Well,
or which kind of speaker is more appropriate?
I think you left out an important one, which is the merging of the two. You know, constitutionally, operationally, under the rules of the House, the speaker is a train conductor. He sits at a switching yard and makes sure all the trains run on time and to make sure all the trains get where they need to go. But unlike the engineer sitting at a switching yard, the speaker puts the trains on the tracks and he decides which engine is going to move which cars. He has much broader authority than just making sure the doors are unlocked at 9 a.m. and making sure that there's water in every pitcher. That's not what the speaker does either. And again, the speaker appoints the committee chairs. The speaker is the one who decides what motions get to be made on the floor of the House, as we have seen over the past couple of sessions. That's very, that's powerful. It's a powerful position. You can say that you're not motivated by ideology, but everyone's motivated by ideology. Everyone has their core beliefs and principles from which they act. No one is this blank tablet. We all have values and principles that guide our actions. My first newspaper reporter drove home that it's a myth to say that no one has a bias. Everyone has a bias. The question is, as a reporter, do you counter your own bias with objectivity? I think the same is true with a legislator. You can, as speaker, both work from your ideological base. You can work from your values, because you always will. You can be honest about it. And at the same time, you can make sure the trains run on time.
So do you think Joe Strauss is a conservative?
I think Joe Strauss has always described himself as a moderate. I'm happy to let him define himself. If Joe Strauss is in the middle of redefining himself politically, I welcome that. I think it's great. You know, as someone who doesn't back away from the label of ideologue, I like being thought of as adhering to ideas and principles. I always welcome when someone wants to be more closely associated with the ideas and principles that energize me. And that if that's the direction Joe Strauss is moving, that's excellent. We shouldn't criticize people for moving in whatever direction as they become more and more educated and more, in tune, aligned with their own values and principles. That's excellent. We should welcome that. At the same time, though, we should make sure as a body politic that as people are moving and shifting, that that we, though, as the people, see our representatives working from the values and principles that we're asking them to work from.
Do you think he should be speaker again?
I think Joe Strauss has a very high bar to make that case. He's going to have to do a lot better job of explaining how he's going to be a different speaker. It's not sufficient to say, well, with 99 Republicans, of course I'm going to be a better speaker. Well, if you have 99 Olympia Snows, that's not exactly the same thing as having 99 Phil Grahams. There is a difference in form and in substance among people who call themselves a Republican. And so I think that's where Joe Strauss is going to have to explain that if we don't have the right policy outcomes, it doesn't matter the Republican-Democrat split. People of Texas are interested in conservative policy leadership. They're interested in seeing if the Republicans really can do what they campaigned on. And I'd suggest that's the first test, particularly of these 22 new House members. They're going to have to make a very, very compelling reason beginning about 18 months from now why they should be kept, that they campaigned in a very strong and forthright principles, and they got elected. Oops. Right. Now they're going to have to demonstrate that they can actually govern with those principles. If they don't, I suspect a lot of them will not have a pleasant 2012. On the other hand, if they can go home to their constituents and say, yeah, you know, we fought the good fight, but we didn't make it across the line. I'm not sure voters are upset by losing as much as they are by not seeing the policy discussions take place.
So you have the ability now for third parties to get involved in this stuff. And so people look at this and they say, what is, and correct me on which hat you're wearing here, is it fiscal responsibility or power?
Yeah.
What is this group, and who is this Michael Quinn Sullivan, and what the heck are they doing trying to guide our vote here? So just tell me a little bit about what your group is, what it represents, who it represents, mm-hmm. and what it's trying to do.
Well, we make no claims of being deal makers or insiders, power Texans and Texans for fiscal responsibility. We're first and foremost want to make sure that citizens are involved and engaged. We also want to make sure that folks are aware of the fiscal consequences of the public policy actions taken. We want to see more involvement in public policy and in public debate and discussion. Nothing's more frustrating to me than looking at a May election for what I consider to be the most important positions in our body politic of city councils and of school boards and find, you know, a big turnout is 2% of the registered voters, which is really 1% of the eligible Texans. That's very frustrating to me. I want to get more people involved and engaged in the process. And that's part of what we do. We want to see people empowered to know how to interact with their government. We're allegedly a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. Let's actually live up to that by getting more folks involved in the discussion process. We're not a democracy, we're a republic, but we're a republic that has all these tinges of democracy where the people are in charge and the folks we elect are our servants. We need to make sure that we're encouraging that. As we look at this at the speaker's race, we just want to make sure that people are able to utilize those rights. Certainly, now, with all that said, we come from a conservative point of view. We focus mainly on fiscal policy. I tend to think that if you're getting the checkbook issues right, everything else then becomes a much easier discussion to have. It's hard to have a reasonable conversation about social issues if everyone's worried if they're going to have a job tomorrow, if you're worried about going to make your house payments. Those discussions become much less pleasant when people are hungry. So let's first get into a comfortable place fiscally. Then we can have those other debates and discussions among ourselves and in the body politic. As we look then at these, at this effort on the speaker's race, I think what we're again wanting to see is just more folks involved. We now, for the first time in a generation, Texans have the right to express their views, to begin to unravel the insider games that have been played for 30 plus years, to express ourselves. Now, it's not accurate to say that third parties weren't involved. That's a myth. The third parties were very much involved. For 30 plus years, speakers would go around. They would collect large contributions from lobbyists and other power brokers. And then the speakers would go out among the incumbents and challengers and whoever, depending on the speaker, and hand out cash that often had on top of the cash on the bottom of it a pledge card. So the third parties were very much involved. Everyone got the joke. It was just a question of whether, you know, these great unwashed masses could also be involved. Well, Judge Sparks says that pesky little U.S. Constitution means we all can be involved. So we'll make sure folks are involved and engaged. The surest way to lose your rights are to not exercise them.
Okay, last question. What form does your, I don't know what you call it, I don't mean this as a pejorative, but your intervention in this thing, what form does it take? Is it mail? Is it phone calls? Is it, I mean, basically when you decide, once you've decided, okay, we need to get involved in the speaker's race here, what do you do?
For us, we just started, putting out some emails. I mean, we started being involved in the speaker's race this summer, last spring, spring before last, as we were talking about the problems we were seeing with these committee chairs and their lack of performance. We have been very consistently talking about asking Speaker Strauss to fix his committee chair problem, to rein in committee chairs calling for new revenue sources, talking about we just need to be ready to spend more. We'd been asking for this to be fixed, and you know, he didn't have to listen to us. We're not his constituents. You know, some nice folks in San Antonio who are his actual constituents. But we've been very clear talking about this as a problem, as an issue. Clearly, voters in Texas weren't too hip with his committee chairs. You saw two of them lose in primaries, and the Republican side, Delwin Jones and Tommy Merritt, both pretty handily defeated. You saw Bert Solomons come very close to a defeat by, you know, a Tea Party activist. You had the Speaker's lieutenant's choice in a fourth chairman's race, Brian McCall, their choice handily defeated by Van Taylor. Then going to the general, you had guys like Jim McReynolds, who campaigned in his district. His main campaign theme was, I'm close to Republican Joe Strauss. I'm close to the Speaker. Reelect me. And the people weren't interested in that discussion. So I think that, you know, a lot of folks have been looking at this issue for a long time. We saw the election results, and we started saying maybe we do need to consider what a conservative speakership looks like, someone who is going to lead the Texas House with the principles that Texans clearly want in the Texas House. When you put a supermajority in the Texas House, or at least a one vote shy of a supermajority, that indicates something. And hopefully over the next month and a half, we will all together, as citizens, as taxpayers, the legislators, we'll all have that discussion about what that something looks like and how it practically morphs into good public policy that benefits Texas come May.